The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host... Normal's outreach coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Thursday, March 31st, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Also want to wish a happy birthday to two people who were profoundly influential in my life as a human being and as a drug law reformer, and that would be my father, John Byron Belville, who turned 69 today. Happy birthday to the Rockin' Johnny B. And to Madeline Martinez, who turns 29 today. Or 39.
Happy birthday.
Something like that. But happy birthday to Madeline as well. And good luck to everybody who has a birthday today and everybody listening to the show. Welcome to the show. We got plenty to cover today. Joining us, of course, in the studio is Ganja John, the engineer.
What's up, Russ?
Just chilling. And I know this is your last day here. Tomorrow, you're gone.
Yeah, no, last day this week, yeah.
Last day this week, of course. Not gone forever.
Calm down.
No, no, no.
Calm
no.
down, everybody.
No, off to the Medical Cannabis Cup.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
do you fly out?
11 a.m. tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can be landing there early in the afternoon and have...
something like 3.
Yeah.
Like that.
Plenty of stuff to do. Be careful. John Doe from John Doe Radio was tweeting out how mile high sickness is a real thing.
Yes.
With the altitude, you know, being up there a mile high, drink lots of water. So
I told him I'm not stepping up a single stair while I'm there.
All escalators, man.
Yeah, all escalators.
I'll tell you, that we were at that Denver KushCon there in Denver, and it was on the second floor of the Expo Center. And yeah, it was noticeable. Going back and forth to the parking lot, that's for sure. Normally, we'd be introducing Cannabis Carrie from our virtual studio in Grastoria. She's off right now. She's actually on her way here. She'll be here later today, and then she'll be in the studio tomorrow for the show. So
I got in touch with my feminine side last night and listened to women's radio that she hosted on Coast Radio.
Yeah. On Coast Radio, coastradio.org at KMUN up there in Astoria. That's great. Yeah, she does a great folk show, too, that we often listen to. So we'll see you tomorrow, Carrie. Coming up on today's show... we've got Groovin' Thursday from the aforementioned John Doe Radio. He's got Donnie Cross and Mystic Roots with some tunes for us today, Sweet Sense Amelia. And then I'm going to do a double shot here. We got a radical rant at half past. I'm going to take a look at this Washington medical marijuana bill that legislates dispensaries and a registry system, give you my thoughts on that. And then at the end of the show, we got some video from Cannabob, some reefer madness that I'm calling Gateway Gill, Buffalo's Buffalo. And a little shout out to my grammatic oddity friends there. Yes, Gateway Gill, Buffalo's Buffalo. We'll get to that at the end of the show. And, of course, Hemp Headlines coming up. We'll talk about a Montana man facing life in prison for 3 grams. We'll talk about cops in New York donning protective gear to protect from a medical marijuana grow house and a weird story about the Arkansas Medical Marijuana Initiative. All that and more coming up on Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live. The voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's
Today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Normal National Conference 2011, Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd.
I'm not a crook.
When President Nixon declared war on marijuana smokers, Normal was founded by a young lawyer named Keith Strupp. And now, in our 40th year, Normal is coming of age as states begin discussing outright marijuana legalization.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Join us in Denver, Colorado, the day after 420 for our 40th annual National Conference. You'll learn about marijuana law, cannabis science, and the grassroots activism necessary to end prohibition. Set in the Mile High City, America's cannabis capital. Special guests include medical marijuana pioneer and Harvard Emeritus Dr. Lester Grinspoon, U.S. Congressman Jared Polis, and Normal founder Keith Strupp. Normal National Conference 2011, coming of age in Denver, Colorado, April 21st through 23rd. It's the true Rocky Mountain High.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Cannabis Carrie's off today as she comes down here to Portland, so I've got the news for you today. A Montana man faces possible life in prison for sharing 3 grams of medical marijuana. This is a story from the Missoulian today. In a Missoula County courtroom, an 8-woman, 4-man jury found Matthew Otto, age 27, guilty of a single charge of criminal distribution of dangerous drugs. In this case, 3 grams, well under an ounce, of marijuana. Otto faces a maximum penalty of life in prison and a $50,000 fine. Well, first of all, under an ounce? Look, how about more like under a tenth of an ounce? About a tenth of an ounce, actually. Regardless, Montana law defines sales or distribution, and that counts giving, you know, handing someone a joint, of any amount of marijuana. It's a felony, and it does allow for 1 year to life in prison and a $50,000 fine. Now, Otto's actually lucky he wasn't within 1,000 feet of a school, or they would have tacked on an additional 3 years minimum to that sentence. Now, again, from the Missoulian, Otto stood accused of sharing a bowl of his medical marijuana with 2 friends in a car traveling down Reserve Street, where the trio passed a Missoula County Sheriff's detective on his way home from work last November. How many times do I have to tell you people not to smoke pot in your freaking car? Even if parked, but especially if moving. Again, from Missoulian here. Both Deputy Missouri County Attorney Andrew Paul and Public Defender Chris Daly questioned potential jurors closely as to their experiences with and attitudes toward marijuana, medical and otherwise. Roughly half the 24 people from whom the eventual jury was chosen raised their hands in response to a question as to whether they'd smoked marijuana. While none had medical marijuana cards, 5 had family members with green cards, the medical marijuana cards. Okay. The reason why half of them raised their hand is because half of all U.S. adults aged 50 or younger have tried marijuana. If that's going to be a disqualification for jury duty, you're going to find it increasingly hard to seat juries. In fact, that happened in Montana just last year, last December. They couldn't seat a jury for a marijuana trial, and it ended up getting settled. Again, going back to the Missoulian, Samantha and Jordan Lambert, who was driving the car, originally told Missoula County Sheriff's Detective John Guntner that they'd gotten the marijuana from Otto, according to court papers. Wednesday, they testified they didn't remember who lit the bowl or where the marijuana in it came from. Mm-hmm. Daly repeatedly pointed out that neither of the Lamberts was charged with possessing or distributing marijuana, even though the bowl was shared among the trio. Jordan Lambert testified, quote, "The detective told me if I was honest with him about taking a hit off the pipe, I would not be in trouble," end quote. Missoula County Sheriff's Detective John Guntner testified that as a narcotics investigator, he felt it was more important to home in on the source of the drug. Okay, so this terribly dangerous 3 grams of medical marijuana that Otto distributed to Jordan Lambert wasn't so dangerous that we needed to charge the pot-smoking non-medical marijuana patient driving the car. It was more important to home in on the legit medical marijuana patient who was the source of the drug. Look, Otto did not hold a gun to Lambert's head and force him to take hits while driving by an off-duty sheriff. Lambert made the choice to endanger other drivers on the road, but the police feel the real danger is the patient medicating in the back seat. He needs to go to prison for life. Continuing with the story, Sheriff's Deputy Bill Burt, who questioned Otto while Guntner was talking with the Lamberts, videotaped that encounter. On the tape, Otto told Burt that he had used medical marijuana, he had a medical marijuana card, and that he used cannabis for back and knee pain. "I've got all kinds of pain from carrying all this equipment." Burt replied, "My point is, you're doing it for the recreation." How do you know that, Deputy Burt? Living with chronic pain is just that. It's chronic. It exists at all times. Just because Otto shared a bowl with two healthy people who may have been using it recreationally doesn't mean that he himself was using it recreationally and not medically. Again, from the Missoulian. "The point," Paul said after the trial, Paul being the public defender, Paul said after the trial, was that Otto's legal medical marijuana became illegal the minute he gave it to someone else. District Court Judge Dusty Deschamps reminded jurors as they began 3.5 hours of deliberations that marijuana is classified as a dangerous drug and that the amount of marijuana is immaterial. So 3 grams, you know, 1/10 of an ounce. Let this be a lesson to you patients out there, because that pipe on your lips is medicine, but if you pass that pipe to your healthy friend's lips, it's suddenly a dangerous drug, and you're no longer a patient. In fact, here in Oregon, the mere sight of your medicine in public transforms it into a dangerous drug, and you from a patient to a criminal. I mean, you can carry around 1.5 pounds on you, but if anyone can see even a single stem or a flake of it, it only takes 29 grams to turn you into a felon, even with your medical marijuana card. Now, Otto was unwise in sharing his bowl with the driver of a moving car, but that driver really deserves a little more punishment than Otto would, and neither of them deserve anything remotely close to life in prison and a $50,000 fine. Oh, and another lesson for patients? Hire a real lawyer. Don't depend on the public defender. Now, while that's going on in Montana, while they're bringing this guy up, medical marijuana patient on distribution of 3 grams of a dangerous drug and facing $50,000 fine and a possible life in prison, definitely a year, but possible life in prison. While that's going on, the Montana House recently passed a bill to increase penalties for sexual assaults. This is from KAJ18 TV. Currently, a person convicted of sexual assault is fined up to $500 and can be imprisoned for up to 6 months. But under Senator Taylor Brown's bills, the penalties will double for a second-time offender, then increase to $10,000 and 5 years in prison for a third offense. You got that? If we catch you for the third time sexually assaulting someone, we could put you in prison for 5 whole years. But if you pass someone a bowl of your medical marijuana, we could put you in prison for life. Because in Montana, people like Missoula County Sheriff's Detective John Guntner and Deputy Missoula County Attorney Andrew Paul have their priorities in order. All right, maybe lighten the mood a little bit with this next story. This one comes out of New York State. And, you know, when I'm doing the news and I'm going through the Google News feed, I have a Google News feed that finds the word marijuana and it brings me every single news story that comes up about marijuana. And I have to pass by all the, well, they busted 20 pounds here. They busted 80 pounds here. They got 6 plants here. They got 12 plants here. Because there's just so many of them. And really, when you classify it, it's not really news. It's such a commonplace occurrence for people to get busted that you can't consider it news for every single story of everyone who gets busted, sad as those stories are. But then every now and then, I catch a headline like this one I got from The Gothamist. "To avoid getting high, pot-busting cops wore protective gear."
So how much was yesterday's huge pot bust worth on the streets? According to the DEA, the haul of 3 tons of dope from 6,000 to 7,000 plants is worth about $10 million, which makes it the largest bust of an indoor marijuana growing operation in New York State history. The Sullivan County Sheriff's Office discovered the grow houses after approaching an SUV that reeked of reefer on Tuesday. Quote, "These guys stank. It was coming out of their pores," one investigator said before hammering the point home. "They stunk out loud. They were very pungent," end quote. Once the plants were discovered, quote, "DEA agents, NYPD cops, and members of the Sullivan County Sheriff's Office wore protective gear to avoid getting contact highs from the veritable forest," end quote, according to the New York Post. Full-on hazmat protective gear to avoid the contact high of walking through a forest of live marijuana plants. Now, look, folks, this notion of a contact high is a myth, okay? In order to get high, the amount of active THC in your bloodstream has to spike. Just numbers, right? And that THC passes the blood-brain barrier, and you get that euphoria that we call a high. Now, normally when we talk about contact high, someone's talking about it in the context of someone, you know, hotboxing a room, right? They're in a room, and they've got a non-smoker with them, and they're exhaling so much cannabis smoke that the non-smoker inhales enough secondhand cannabis smoke to experience a high. Now, this is really not possible because the people who were exhaling that smoke have already absorbed the THC from it within 3 seconds of inhalation, right? There's no way to get a contact high unless, now I'll give you a possibility. If you had massive amounts of cannabis left to burn openly in a small room, or the people smoking cannabis inhale and exhale so fast that there's still a lot of THC in their smoke. Now, if you're in a room full of inexperienced smokers, and, you know, maybe. But really, there's a better case to be made for a placebo effect, that you're just feeling a contact high because everybody else around you is acting like a fool and you're feeling kind of goofy. Now, another context for the contact high would be the cops, you know, burning a big pile of seized cannabis. But again, for that, they need to be standing really close to the pile and really close to thick smoke, you know, so it's not getting diluted by all the air around. And they'd have to, you know, stand there for a while. And that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about cops going in and seizing live plants. Right? Now, we're supposed to believe that the buds are exhaling THC in the cops' faces and getting them high? Look, that pungent stank that you're experiencing comes from flavonoids and terpenoids of the cannabis plant. Those don't get you high. They stink. They don't get you high. THC is contained in those resiny trichromes on the buds, and if that's a problem, wear some gloves. Really, the only reason you put on that full hazmat meth lab protective gear was to propagandize the danger of the grow houses to the media. That's why you did it. You're just trying to, you know, send a point home here. Now, again, let's go to those numbers from the DEA. According to the New York Post, it said there was a forest of 6,300 pot plants with a street value. Oh, it's $20 million now, John. It's $20 million. Not $10 million, $20 million.
That's about $5,000 a pound.
We're getting there. 6,300 pot plants with a street value of $20 million. And according to DEA spokeswoman Erin McKenzie Mulvey, the plants would account for the equivalent of 3 million joints.
3 million.
3 million. So I got my calculator out because, you know me, I'm into like math and science and rationality and stuff. Silly stuff. My calculator tells me that means 6,300 goes into 20 million. Did I do 20 million or 10 million? I think I did 20 million. Yeah, I did it right. That a pot plant's worth $3,175 in New York.
Really?
$3,000. A pot plant's worth $3,000. $3,175.
Yeah.
And, of course, when they say they see 6,300 pot plants, we don't know how many of them are seedlings.
Right.
We don't know
how
many are veg, right? But 6,300, they're all worth $3,000. And then, for the 3 million joints, that means a pot plant will produce 475 joints-ish. 475 joints. And that means that a joint must sell in New York for $6.75 a piece. Come on.
Yeah, now. I don't know about that.
It cracks me up whenever they try to, you know, scare us with this. The DEA tries to scare us with this value of a pot plant as if all of them would be brought to harvest and then all of them would be sold on the street as if they were joints. You know, we always get these incredibly inflated numbers to scare the public. $20 million worth of marijuana plants, 6,000 plants, 3 million joints off the streets. But when a patient is suing the local sheriff to get his lawful medical marijuana plants returned, Yeah, suddenly those plants aren't worth $3,175 a piece anymore, are they? Right? Suddenly they really drop in value here. Oh, that's amazing. New York cops don protective gear. The story's up at the blog at stash.normal.org, where you can also get more information on all of the stories we cover and downloads of the music and the podcast from the first hour that you're hearing here at live.normal.org. Also, get the information on the Normal Network. Just click the heading at the top that says The Normal Network for a PDF of the schedule and the dates and times of all the shows.
I think if you busted into my house with hazmat gear on to grab my pot plants, I'd probably laugh at you.
That's an amazing story, man. I wish I had a photo from it. Yeah. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
West Vienna, Malgo, broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to broke down barrier. Boost the economy and broke down barrier. It's helping other states, broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice, broke down barrier. We gonna change the law, broke down barrier. We got to educate, broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know, bigging up USVI normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a nonprofit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
High in the Rockies, for the first time ever, High Times is hosting the Medical Cannabis Cup in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup. There'll be cultivation seminars with High Times editors Danny Danko and Nico Escondido, plus other experts and cannabis celebrities. Attend activism seminars with leaders of the medical marijuana movement, including advice on how to start your own cannabis business. Meet industry leaders in medical cultivation, hydroponics, smokable glassware, hemp products, dispensary supply, cannabis accessories, and more. Plus, Medical Cannabis Cups will be awarded to the best indica, sativas, concentrates, and edibles entered by legally operating medical marijuana dispensaries and growing collectives. And don't forget Saturday night when the Medical Cannabis Cup will host the extravaganza with surprise musical guests. The High Times Medical Cannabis Cup, April 2nd and 3rd, 2011 at Exto in Denver, Colorado. Visit medcancup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis industry. Come to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in Denver.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we bring you tunes for Groovin' Thursday, our salute to all the dopest beats and killer rhymes that we find in the best of rap, hip-hop, soul, R&B, and funk. Brought to you by the John Doe Radio Show in Denver, Colorado. Accurate and informative marijuana reform news and entertainment. Available on the THC Media Network and johndoeradio.com. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Smile. It's a doobie.
John Doe. Groovin' Thursday and Normal Show Live. I am John Doe. Thank you very much for joining us. I am looking forward to catching all of y'all in town for this weekend's Cannabis Cup or for the Normal National Convention coming up later on this month. It is going to be fantastic, good times. Speaking of good times, in the background, Kid Cudi. You can hear that do-do-do-do-do. Oh, yeah, that's just sweetness. Going to get to see Kid Cudi this weekend at the High Times Cannabis Cup in Denver. We will try and get an interview with him if we can. We'll bring it coming to you live on John Doe Radio on the Normal Network, live.normal.org. Serving up today to you, I am. It is Mystic Roots. Hey, how you like that? I made that sense into from nothing into something. Serving up an original style bass in reggae, hip-hop, and dancehall with overtones of rock, funk, and ska, a Mystic Roots band live concert guarantees not just music for your ears, but also a high-energy show and powerful experience you'll never forget. This Chico-born, now San Diego-based group brings a brand new sound while embracing the nature of roots reggae wholeheartedly and performing it with smooth vocals and harmonies, energetic freestyles, and beatboxing all over a solid groove. The music and lyrics are catchy and upbeat, yet with a powerful and positive message. The musicianship of the players is top-notch, and arrangements are often complex and always interesting. I can tell you, being a musician myself, the Mystic Roots are second to none when it comes to bands, really anywhere, honestly, but when it comes to bands in our, you know, sort of celebrated culture, they are second to none. The band tours the U.S. full-time playing shows with some of the biggest names in reggae, hip-hop, and rock. Mystic Roots band promotes positivity and spreads a conscious message while still having a good time and keeping the party going. Fans describe Mystic Roots band's music as a refreshing, energetic, and cutting-edge sound that people are immediately drawn to. As a result, Mystic Roots band has developed an ever-growing legion of loyal fans. This fan base exists not only in the United States, they are huge in Canada, Mexico, Europe, Latin America, Australia, all over. That's what happens when you tour 24/7. This song, a remix that I got here recently called Sweet Sensimilla. You heard it right here on Normal Show Live. I am John Doe. Until we meet again, we'll see.
Why yo, why yaga yaga ye? Sweet Sensimilla, burning in the night. Sweet Sensimilla, yeah, gonna make ya feel right. Sweet Sensimilla, burning in the night. Sweet Sensimilla, yeah, gonna make ya feel right. I remember the day Jaja showed me the way. I read meditation, it is the only way. So don't you abuse it, yeah. Its resources a must. Just build a split and pass it to us, yeah. Sweet Sensimilla, burn it in the night. Sweet Sensimilla, yeah, gonna make ya feel right. Sweet Sensimilla, burn it in the club. Sweet Sensimilla, yeah, gonna make ya feel love. I just woke up, I've got 14 hours to go. Lord knows I won't waste my day on heroin or blow. No, Cali herb, Cali herb. Can you feel its effects? We smoke Cali herb, give thanks and praise for your most majestic gift. Yo, I stand up on top of my mystic sound and burning me ganja pipe. Chico cops come and tell me that's not right. I just keep burning and I pass it with delight. And then them come and then them look upon me bald head and them say, hey Mr. Baldhead, where you come from? You must have two stick of sensei under your tongue. No officer Lord, you must be mad. He only smokes cigarettes, strictly swag. But my man could smoke the good sensei. I sit on top of my mystic sound with my mystic posse. And then me light it in a bong, smoke upon the crown. I feel it in my lungs, my mind and body strong. Oh, oh, oh. This is dedicated to my people east and west. Getting elevated like in Pineapple Express.
We like to blaze our eyes, puff whenever we can. That's why we keep a vaporizer up inside of the van. Ganja on demand, how it's meant to be. That's why I got my car to shop at the dispensary.
Thank you.
No more penitentiary for my crops. Beg your pardon. I got a legal herb tree in my garden. 420, I got plenty in the ashtray. Colorado legalized so we can all get nasty. My people up in Amarillo waiting for Texas to partake in herbal medication. Then we can catch a fire so incredible, or bake me up a batch of peanut butter edibles. Ganja chocolate, get me higher than a rocket. I like to vaporize with my lady before I knock it. Ganja, ganja, grow right. I ain't afraid of police, just them little spider mice. NorCal Hydro, cushion my possession. Mendo got the endo and the roots got a question. Who freaks the funk? The ill funk freak that's smoking straight. Sweet sensamilia. Who freaks the funk? The ill funk freak that's smoking straight. Sweet sensamilia, yeah. Smoking sweet sensamilia. Our vapor brothers in the place.
Song for your iPod? Check out the Davey Tucker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media and then Tucker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
You want answers?
I was mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Shirley, you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
Radical Rant.
All right, I wanted to take a chance to look just north of me here in the Pacific Northwest to Washington State, where medical marijuana has been legal since 1998. But unlike every other medical marijuana state, Washington has no medical marijuana card registry. Now, most states have a mandatory registry, like down here in Oregon, and a couple of states, like California and Colorado, have a voluntary registry where you can get a registry card that protects you from arrest. Washington State has no such thing. It depends on the written recommendation or just the recommendation of a physician, but this has led to many patients being arrested in Washington State. Now, also, Washington never made a provision for patients to legally acquire medicine. So in that niche there, a system of questionably legal dispensaries have appeared. A bill to address these issues has passed the Washington State Senate, and it's now being heard in the House Ways and Means Committee. Now, medical marijuana dispensaries in Washington State are based on a novel legal theory that they aren't really storefronts selling cannabis to multiple patients, but they are an individual caregiver caring for the health of one individual patient at a time. Now,
Some lawmakers and police think it is ludicrous that someone is a total stranger's caregiver from the moment they approach a counter through the 90 seconds it takes for a transaction, and then they're no longer the caregiver as the next stranger approaches and becomes the single patient for that store counter caregiver. Some people, you know, have a problem with that. And before we go much further, you know, I better give you full disclosure, because I might be a little bit biased on this issue. My wife has her license as a certified nurse's assistant and had spent many low-wage hours and injured her back and knees helping disabled elderly adults twice her size in and out of beds and on and off of toilets. She's changed the diapers of patients, fed the most disabled patients by hand, and been kicked and punched by patients with Alzheimer's agitation, and sat with loved ones in hospice as they watch their relatives pass on while racked with opiate-deadened pain. So forgive me a little if I get peeved at a weed dealer calling himself a caregiver, okay? All right, now, the Washington Medical Marijuana Law says, this is from Chapter 69.51A of the RCW, purpose and intent, persons who act as primary caregivers to such patients shall also not be found guilty of a crime under state law for assisting with the medical use of marijuana. Definitions. Primary caregiver means a person who is responsible for the housing, health, or care of the patient. And furthermore, qualifying the designated primary caregiver shall, and this is the part they pin the dispensary theory on, be the primary caregiver to only one patient at any one time. So again, that's their theory, is that, you know, I'm sitting here behind a counter with a whole bunch of medicine, and a person, a total stranger to me, walks up and signs up to be my patient. I'm their caregiver. I'm only signing up with one person at one time. I provide them medicine, which is assisting with the medical use of marijuana, and then they leave, and then at that point they cease being my patient that I'm caring for, and the next stranger who walks up is the patient that I'm the caregiver for, right? Now, someone who voted for this law, who's not into medical marijuana, doesn't know the whole situation, would probably read those sections I read you to mean that a person who's a caregiver is somebody who's legitimately caring for a medical marijuana patient's housing, health, or care, and only takes care of one patient. But now the medical marijuana dispensaries are interpreting it to mean, you know, my exchange of cannabis for money counts as caring for a person's health so long as I'm assisting with the medical use of marijuana for only one patient at one time. Now, this might be legally defensible, but it's not common sense defensible. At Washington State's Department of Health site for nursing, they define a caregiver as anyone providing hands-on personal care and or assistance with daily care. Washington State's Caregiver Resources lists caregivers for aging, ALS, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease, Alzheimer's, Easter Seals, you know, United Way-style resources, you know, people that go to your house and cook your food and, you know, take care of your bathroom necessities, etc., right? Everywhere else you look in Washington law, a caregiver is someone who does more than merely dispense medicine to a patient. And while you do have to acquire medicine in order to use it medicinally, the act of acquisition is not the act of use. Now, there actually is a designation in Washington law for someone who just dispenses medicine to a patient. It's called pharmacist. Yet, when I look in the 616-page Washington State Department of Health Board pharmacy laws and rules, there are only two references to caregiver. One's on page 257, referring to a product safety educational campaign that should include foster parents and other caregivers. Another is at page 578 that defines in-home care settings and how caregivers relate to that and to dispensaries. But in other words, nowhere in Washington law is a pharmacist referred to as a caregiver. Even if you can argue that his dispensation of medicine to sick and disabled patients is necessary for them to use those substances medicinally. Now, of course, pharmacists aren't allowed to dispense cannabis, which is why we have this whole caregiver acting as a pharmacist for patients who need cannabis. And look, my analysis here is not meant to demean the people doing that or the people taking advantage of that. We got to get medicine to sick patients. I'm just saying this. I'm not a dispensary, I'm a caregiver justification is part of the reason why the voting public is increasingly buying into the meme that medical marijuana activists are really just pot dealers cleverly duping the public, that our cries of caregiving ring hollow in the face of profits, and that if they give us an inch of compassion, we'll exploit a mile of loopholes. Now, the Kitsap Sun reviewed the latest committee meeting on this bill, and here's a quote from the Sun. It says, "The current bill, introduced by State Senator Gene Colwell's Democrat of Seattle, would set up a regulatory system for licensing and monitoring medical marijuana producers, processors, and dispensers. It would also provide protection from prosecution for qualifying patients, healthcare professionals, producers, and dispensers. And it would establish a registry of patients and providers, which law enforcement could consult to make sure users, growers, and distributors are legal." Now, every time the subject of a registry comes up here, I hear complaints from some folks, and including in the Kitsap story, attorney Kent Underwood, who said, since marijuana remains illegal under federal laws, some fear that federal law might check the registry for leads on its cases. Look, every other medical marijuana state has either a mandatory registry system or a voluntary one, and none of them have ever had those databases queried by federal law enforcement. It's not happened. The feds have tried subpoenaing patient records and registry records, but they've never been successful. They're turned away by the courts every single time. The only law enforcement that can access the patient registry are the state and local cops, and they can only do it in pursuit of a case where they have probable cause, and they have to be identified and recorded when they access the database, and they can only get a yes or no answer as to whether a person or property is legally registered for medical possession or cultivation. They can't go on a fishing expedition to find out if a guy that they don't like is growing weed, and even if they did, what would they find out? They'd find out he's legal under the state law, and they couldn't go after him. There's no fish worth catching here, and the state local cops, there's nothing for them to be going after, and the federal cops aren't allowed to cast their line in the pond. If the fear here is that you're going to be on a list, oh my God, I don't want to be on a list, isn't the list of people not to arrest a good list to be on? If you're going to be on a list, I would think so. I have a caregiver card here in the state of Oregon. I think it's much better to have a card that says, please don't take me away in handcuffs, than not. But that's my opinion. All right, let me go to this other part on this. The House Health Care Committee made several changes to the Senate bill, including requiring the Washington Department of Health to set up a county-by-county quota of medical marijuana dispensaries. Well, that's good that we might have, you know, at least a minimum number that are required in a county. All right. State licenses would be issued by lottery to a specific number of dispensaries in each county. Current dispensaries would not be guaranteed to receive licenses if the bill becomes law. This is a legitimate concern. This I have a problem with, because sure, these existing dispensaries, you know, caregivers one at a time situations may not be legal technically, but they do have experience. Why would we punish the caring provider and successful businessman with good intentions who's running a well-liked dispensary for years by letting a lottery reward some Johnny-come-lately carpet-bagging prohibition profiteer who's dealing street-priced eighth from a third-rate office? Why do we want to punish the guy who's doing it well, the guy who's got the clientele, who's got the experience in the business, and who has legitimately been helping people? Again, I don't want anybody to, because I know people get upset at this, but, you know, I'm upset with the tactic. I'm upset with this justification that has to be made, the way that it rings in the public domain and in the media. The act of actually getting the medicine to the patients, I applaud. I think that's a beautiful thing. But this lottery idea, you know, reward guys that just showed up, you know, late in the game to try to make a buck. They have just as much chance as the people who've been working in Washington State for decades now to help patients. That ain't right. That ain't right. Still, I think having a regulatory system for licensing and monitoring medical marijuana producers, processors, and dispensers in the law, I think that's a better protection than, well, my dispensary is just a primary caregiver to one patient at a time. I don't think that's going to protect you for very much longer. Now, one other part in this Washington bill I also have a big problem with. Another change forbids a doctor's practice from being solely concentrated on medical marijuana prescriptions. You know, they mean recommendations, but media still does that. This is just a knee-jerk reaction of politicians who see medical marijuana clinics as some sort of, you know, front to artificially inflate patient rolls. What they don't understand here is that most patients, almost every patient I know, would prefer their primary care provider would recommend cannabis for them, but they can't. If their doctor works for the Veterans Administration, they can't because it's against federal law. If their doctor's working for certain hospitals, working for certain HMOs, or carrying certain insurance, they can't recommend because their boss or their policy or their contract forbids them from doing so. There's even some doctors who could recommend, but they're so afraid of the stigma and any interference with their federal prescription license that they won't do it. And then there's some who legitimately might want to help a patient or two, but they don't want to become known as a pot doc and then get flooded with requests from everybody, from a bunch of their other patients. So the majority of their patients can't get their medical marijuana recommendation from their doctor. So they go to the additional trouble of gathering up all their medical records, in most cases for the past 3 years, and then they take them to a medical marijuana clinic where they have another doctor, a specialist who understands medical marijuana, review all those records and make sure they qualify. This isn't California where they can walk into any old doctor tent and, you know, say they have anxiety and walk out with a recommendation. This doctor, this specialist in these, you know, medical marijuana specialty clinics, they have to review these records and they have to qualify under very stringent conditions, right? And then it, basically what we're saying here is that any patient who's going to one of these specialty clinics has essentially been recommended by two doctors. They've already had their condition verified by their primary care physician, and now it's been secondly, you know, the second opinion. It's been verified a second time by the medical marijuana doctor. And that you have a problem with? That you're going to take away from people? You're going to take away their right to be a legal medical marijuana patient, because they happen to have the wrong doctor who's a VA doctor or works for, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield or Kaiser or any number, legacy healthcare system, whatever? That's going to be the reason you're going to make them a criminal again? This is just insane. So there are good and bad points to this Washington State medical marijuana bill that's currently in the House Ways and Means Committee. To me, the addition of a registry and the regulation of dispensaries are good things, but this distributing it through a lottery and trying to restrict the medical marijuana doctors are bad things. This is not the final bill. It can be amended. Contact your Washington State legislators, and we've got a list of them at normal.org. Also, check out Washington Normal at wanormal.org. That's the Radical Rant for now. When we come back, we'll be debunking some reefer madness from Gateway Gill, who buffaloes buffalo, right after this.
76% of Americans no longer support arresting and jailing marijuana smokers, and nearly as many support the medical patients having access to medical marijuana. And over 80% of our citizens now believe the war on drugs is an ineffective failure. So the question is, when will the government's misguided war on adult marijuana smokers finally end? When? Simple. When you and your like-minded friends, family, and co-workers get involved with an organization such as the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML. My name is Keith Stropp, and I founded the organization in 1970. Contact us at NORML, toll free, 888-67-NORML, or by visiting the organization's up-to-date webpage at www.normal.org.
Legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join NORML today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
Free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me say,
free the marijuana.
Como say,
free the marijuana.
This is NORML Show Live.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, it's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing, I mean, it's just...
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
drug, which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Oh, yeah, some classic Reefer Madness coming up for you. Gateway Gill, our drug czar, Buffalo's Buffalo. You may remember he went out to Seattle to visit with the editorial board of the Seattle Times after they had called for marijuana legalization. But Gill, in addition to being a former police chief in Seattle, also spent time in Buffalo, New York. And so he went this week to the Buffalo newspaper and spoke to them. We have video from that that was so graciously put together by Cannabob, talking drugs with the nation's drug czar. R. Gil Klerlikowski chats with the Buffalo News March 28th. Question, are we winning the war on drugs or losing it?
I ended the war on drugs 2 years ago, Danny. You should have read the Wall Street Journal. I mean, Gary Fields, I got to send you the article. But I think that that's the wrong metaphor and the wrong way to work in it. In minority communities, war on drugs, people think of it as a war on them.
I wonder what might have led to that perception, Gil. Could it be the arresting of minority individuals in these neighborhoods for drugs? The war on drugs was over 2 years ago, John. Did you realize? 2 years ago.
What?
Yeah, no more war on drugs. Those 1.7 million people that have been arrested for cannabis since those 2 years?
Yeah.
Illusion.
Oh.
All fake. The war on drugs is over.
Really?
All right, let's go back to Gateway Gill.
You can say, gee, it's a war on a product, it's a war... I don't think it does it. It also kind of tells you that this is a win-lose situation and what's the end game and on and on.
So basically what he's saying here is calling it the war on drugs implies that at the end there will be a victor and there will be a surrender and there will no longer be a war. What he's telling you here is that we can't call it war on drugs because we don't intend it to ever end.
And I think if we look at it as a public health problem and a public safety problem, will have much greater effect. I mean, we recognize that addiction is a disease and addiction can be treated.
Yeah, here's the problem though, Gateway Gill, is that the people who really seriously have addictions to methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin, they can't get in the beds for the treatment because they're filled up with nonviolent marijuana consumers whose only tie to addiction is they got caught by the cops and sentenced by a drug court to go to a rehab. If you're really serious about treatment over incarceration, why does the budget of the Obama administration very closely match the same ratios as the Bush administration, the Clinton administration before that, and so forth? Administrations going back throughout the drug war with a 2-to-1 funding ratio of incarceration and interdiction to treatment and rehabilitation. You cannot run away from those numbers, Gil. The fact remains the Obama administration likes to talk about rehab and all, but when the money is put down, they like to continue what we've been doing, and that's arresting people for drugs.
You know, if we all go out, you know, one evening, five of us, one could be a little bit more affected by something that they drink, just a little bit more, because of their makeup, than maybe the other four people. So we do have to recognize all the physical. The other part is bringing addiction and drug treatment as part of primary health care.
So I'm not even sure what that means about the one person could get drunker than the other four people wouldn't get drunk. Are you trying to tell us, Gil, that people that have addiction problems are a minority, even when we're talking about alcohol, that most people, like when we're talking about alcohol, most people can use this substance responsibly, and unless they're causing a problem to someone else, we don't need to consider them an addict? Is that the point you were trying to make, is that most of the people using drugs are not abusing drugs? Because I'm not exactly sure why you threw that in there. Next question, is the criminalization of marijuana worth the resources needed to enforce it?
We did a lot because California's Proposition 19, which was to legalize marijuana, and actually people in California did most of it, but we delivered a lot of information and support on all of the things that Proposition 19 said it would accomplish.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Proposition 19 wasn't a federal measure, was it? It had nothing to do with the federal government, right? It was a state political initiative that you inserted the federal government into in order to propagandize against citizens who had put together an initiative to ask fellow citizens to vote on marijuana's legalization. Do we have it all straight here? Now, I understand there's nothing illegal about what you've done. In fact, the mandate of the Drug Czar's office is to oppose the legalization of any substance in Schedule 1, regardless of what use it may be used for, medical, spiritual, recreational, doesn't matter. In fact, it is your job to go out there to California and oppose Prop 19. I just wanted to make sure everyone was clear here that we're using federal taxpayer funds to interfere with democracy in the states.
That it would reduce criminal justice costs, and the research shows it really wouldn't. If you think about alcohol as perfectly legal substance that's out there, and yet there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of alcohol-related arrests every year. DWI, untaxed alcohol, underage possession, on and on and on. So there's no reason to believe that marijuana isn't going to result in also criminal justice arrests.
Well, except for that whole part about alcohol being toxic and addictive. Yeah, other than that part, right? Other than the part about alcohol being proven to lead to violence and proven to lead to problems on the roads and traffic fatalities and abuse of other human beings and crime. Other than that difference, really, there's no difference. I mean, we could expect. Look here, this is the bait and switch that they always want to pull on you with the Drug Czar's office. And by the way, we'll be running this to the end of our show here in the podcast. But when we come back in hour two, we'll continue with more Gateway Gill. So for those of you listening live, just, you know, stay tuned. We'll continue all of this. But here's the problem: they always want to bring up alcohol and tobacco, and they say we bring in X number of tax dollars from taxing alcohol and tobacco, but we have Y dollars in costs, which is greater than the X we bring in taxes, right? So it actually costs us more to have legal tobacco and alcohol. I mean, we do anyway. Nobody's talking about criminalizing those, are they, Gil? But we bring in less in the taxes than we actually spend in all the lung cancer deaths and drunk driving and enforcement of underage drinking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, that is absolutely true. Because, again, those drugs are toxic and addictive. Cannabis use, it's not as if we legalize it and then suddenly there will be 25 million adults in America that are using it at least once a year. That's happening now, Gil. People are smoking pot right now. So if there is a cost, and I'm not saying there is, but if there is a cost associated to the society from the smoking of pot, it's happening now. We are paying it now. Okay, we're paying that cost right now, and we're taking in, let me see, zero. Yes, we're taking in zero in exchange, right? We don't even get as good of a deal as we get with alcohol and tobacco, where we take in some tax money to offset the cost of the people smoking and drinking. We're taking in zero in tax money for cannabis, and having whatever cost you assume there is from cannabis. And again, I'm saying there's not going to be a cost associated with cannabis anywhere near what we find from alcohol and tobacco, because again, cannabis is not toxic and addictive like alcohol and tobacco. What a silly thing. And furthermore, he concludes that with something about the, you know, we have to have all these enforcement. We still have to arrest people for drunk driving. We still have to arrest people for minor in possession. So is your argument here the fact that if we legalized marijuana and still had to enforce laws against kids smoking pot or people driving stoned, that's too much of a hassle? We might as well just keep arresting everyone? Really? So many of the Drug Czar's arguments, when you listen to them, if you just work them backwards from what their stated goal is to what they just said, you work the logic backwards, you see how silly it is. The notion that the only way we can send the right message to the children is to continue to lock up cancer patients. The only way that we can prevent mayhem on the roads from stone drivers is to lock up adults in their home who are smoking pot. You know, the crazy logic, if you work it backwards, you realize exactly how crazy it is. Let's end here with a little more from Gateway Gill.
The second thing they said is that it would help in taxes. It would increase taxes. But why would anybody pay taxes on something that they can grow in their backyard or buy on the black market?
Well, goodness, why would I pay the taxes, the beer taxes, on a bottle of Budweiser when I can just go down? In fact, there's a place right down here off 83rd or so where I can go and get me home brewing supplies and brew my own beer. Well, you know why, Gil? Growing marijuana is a pain in the ass. It is. It's hard. It's difficult. It's not hard, but it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of diligence. John will tell you, man, it's not something you just jump right into. Oh,
it's work.
I'll throw a seed in there, and then I'll have some weed 9 months later, weeks later. No, it don't work like that, Gil. It's a pain in the ass. And plenty of us who have black thumbs wouldn't mind at all paying a tax to get some good quality marijuana at a decent price. And as far as there being a black market, the only way that black market could possibly exist is if the people, if you're overtaxing and overpricing the legal marijuana. Keep the prices reasonable, and plenty of us would much rather be legal than be buying off of an unregulated market. We'll get some more from Gateway Gil. We're going to continue this in hour two, Toker Talk Radio. Also going to record this on the video so you can go to our site and catch the whole thing if you missed it on podcast. For Gone to Dawn and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.